Hey guys, Toolman Tim here. Welcome back to the workshop where we create community, find freedom, promote preparedness, and share success. It's January 20th, 2021, and this is episode 59 of the Workshop Podcast and the seventh episode in our ongoing series, the Preparedness Series. And tonight, we're going to talk about when home appliances attack. Well, kind of. Basically, the repairs we can do, the maintenance we can do on all major appliances in the home. It might surprise you at what you can actually do yourself, especially doing a little bit of Google Foo and going from there. But before we do, let's knock out a couple of announcements, guys. This week, I always brag up the guys, my fellow content creators on the Prepper Broadcast Network, but this week was no exception. The Next Generation podcast, Ryan and his son, they did an awesome episode on Martin Luther King Day, and they took some of his best quotes and kind of extrapolated some preparedness principles from that. And it was a knockdown, drag out episode. It was great. And then the Matter of Facts guys, they did a super practical one that's right up the alley with preparedness. And one of the two guys on there is looking at buying a new home. So they talked about what to look for in buying a new property. And of course, talked about the challenges right now that you have to deal with. But it was a great episode. If anybody out there is looking at buying a new home, check out that episode of the Matter of Facts. They put out a great episode every week too. For those of you who are still using Facebook, I seem to have a fair bit of a following over there. So I'm obviously not going to abandon it completely. But I did a split. For a long time, my All Seasons Maintenance Handyman page was kind of getting taken over by the Toolman Tim stuff. And I decided it was time to separate them. So the page that has always been there is going back to being just the handyman page. And there's now a separate Toolman Tim's workshop page for Facebook. So it is now, if you want to grab the link in the description below, it's there. We got about 25 people. It's just starting to take off. So drop in there, you guys. You'll see a lot of the same stuff I post on social media, some of the pictures and, you know, a little bit more maybe of the handyman stuff, but it's just going to be a Facebook page. And if it takes off, I may end up simulcasting my stream over there as well. So, and number three, and this one I'm really excited about. I've become more and more, in love with Telegram. I love the interface, the easiness of it. And so I wanted there to be an official workshop community chat room, I guess, for lack of a better term. So I launched the Telegram one. It's pretty lonely over there right now. We've only got a few people, but I'd love for you guys to come by, check it out, add yourself to the link. Excuse me, guys. And yeah, just drop by, say hello. Just make sure you text me or say something while you're in there so I know, and I'll come by and we'll have a great chat. So anyway, and I got to tell you, I didn't know if I was going to make it in tonight. I almost considered messaging James and a few people and letting them know, hey, it's not going to happen, because for whatever reason, January this year has been a crazy year for snow. But today we had snow of the liquid variety. And of course, it was minus 32 a couple of days ago here. And the ground is froze solid and it decided it was going to rain. And it rained for about 4 hours and everything is covered in about an eighth of an inch of ice right now. It's like a skating rink. I use 10 bags of salt on my properties. It's a crazy day. So if you guys are struggling with a schizophrenic January, well, and then there's Ted. He always has to show up and rub it in my face that he gets to walk in the sand all the time in the sunshine, 70 and sunny year round or whatever it is. But no, anyway, so it's been icy up here. But anyway, I digress. Tonight, we're going to talk about appliances of the home, the major variety, major appliances. So we're talking washer, dryer, oven, dishwasher, fridge, and freezer. And you guys know, I normally start out with some interesting facts, some interesting tidbits, a little bit of research. But everybody always says, appliances don't last like they used to. And they're not wrong. There's some empirical evidence that says it. But if you're wondering how long appliances last, gas stoves, 15 years, electric stoves, on average, 13. Dryer, electric or gas, 13 years. Fridges, 13. Freezers, 11. Washing machines, 10. And dishwashers, 9. And some dishwashers seem like they only last about 3 years. And they also said that one of the most common small appliances to die for households is microwaves. Not sure why that is, but, my parents had one for like 25 years that lasted. And it seems like Becky and I have had to replace ours about every 3 years since we've been married. So I don't know why that is. As far as there's five major brands of appliances, and you'll see a lot of crossover within any of the makes within those certain models. but you got Whirlpool, Electrolux, GE, Samsung, and LG. And they all carry a wide range of appliances. They carry all five of them, or all six of the major appliances. But here's the breakdown. I didn't know this, but Samsung's the most popular one now in North America, 20%. And they've only been doing appliances for, you know, a decade or two now. Whirlpool's second with 16%. But here's the cool thing. So Brian says he hasn't owned a microwave in 7 years. I'm impressed. I don't know. So Whirlpool, if you guys have ever seen Whirlpool and you think, oh yeah, that's, you know, I recognize that name. Well, if you've ever seen KitchenAid, Maytag, Amana, Gen Air, Roper, Estate, and Inglis, those are also Whirlpool. They pretty much own every brand on the market that isn't Electrolux, GE, Samsung, or LG. So if there's any weird name of a washer or dryer, fridge, or stove, it's probably under the Whirlpool brand. And the cool thing about that is parts are quite often interchangeable. We'll get into that later on. But yeah, just something to know. Now, I don't know about you guys, but everyone I know has a story where their sister's uncle's mother's brother has a dryer that they've been using since before Jim Morrison, Jimi Hendrix, or Jimmy Hoffa died. You know, I grew up going to see my grandmother at her house. She got married in the 1950s, and they bought all new appliances back then. And I was still going to visit her in the mid-90s, and she still had almost all of those original appliances. She even had one of those fridges that if you got inside it, I think you could survive a nuclear bomb. I think it was lead-lined, I'm not sure, because the thing weighed like 1,000 pounds. It had the rounded corners with the pull-down, old-style ice chest fridge door, and I can still hear the noise that it made every time you pulled that handle down. It was like a high-pitched squeak or squeal or something. I don't know. It was just awful, but I mean, the thing was ancient, but it still worked. I'd hate to see what her power bill was, but you know, so the old appliances, they did tend to last, right? And so I did a little more digging. And of course, the average lifespan of appliances is significantly shorter now than it was in 1980. It's not just recency bias. So it's not just one of those things where, hey, we see an old appliance, it's still working. We think, oh, well, they must have made them better. They really did. But here's the thing. They were made better back then, but they were also more expensive. So appliances on average, when you're looking at inflation, are two-thirds cheaper today than they were in 1981. And the newer appliances also save you in theory, a lot more on power and electricity. So there's that. Now here's something else. If you guys are looking to spend more on an appliance, something that'll last, you know, 20 years minimum in theory, there's a brand out there, and if you haven't heard of it, it's pronounced Miele, but it's spelled M-I-E-L-E. So if anybody's heard of that brand or seen it out there, they are one of my favorite online forums in Reddit is the Buy It For Life subreddit category that I go over to a lot. And I've had a lot of good recommendations. That's where the Easy Does It, sorry, can opener. That's where it came from and a bunch of other things. Anyway, they're super highly regarded over there. However, there is one caveat. An entry-level washing machine costs $1,500 US. So you could buy, oh, Ted says they make good vacuums or great vacuums, sorry. That I did not know, my friend. See, that's cool. And yeah, they are a high, they're made with a lot of life cycles, a lot of run cycles in mind. The parts are great. They supposedly last. Now, they don't have much of a better warranty, which is kind of weird. But yeah, if you're looking for, you know, a damn near laundromat experience, you know, as far as how long it's going to last, Miele appliances are something to look at. Just, you know, a few kind of thoughts before we dig in. Now, here's another thing. You might say, well, you know, I'd love to work on my own appliances, but I'm going to get an extended warranty. So are they worth it? I guess it depends. If you're buying high-end appliances that have a lot of, you know, the digital readouts, the LCD screens, that kind of stuff, then yeah, it might be worth it. But I got to say, the companies that offer these warranties, they're not in the business of losing money on them. And if they did, they'd either put the price up or they'd cancel them altogether. Now, my wife and I, we bought all new appliances just as COVID started. And I didn't take my own advice, and we did buy, you know, all digital washer and dryer. You can even control them with Bluetooth or something like that. And because, well, she wanted something that looked nice and ran well. And so that's the way we went. But read the fine print on your warranty. I wanted something where they would come and repair it in home, and they do. The only thing is that they don't offer a replacement warranty very quickly. You have to go through quite a process before they'll actually replace the appliance, because they installed, brought all our appliances up, had them all installed. We went to cook on the oven one day, and the big burner on the top didn't work. And they must have came back 6 or 8 times trying different parts every time. And each time it failed. And finally, they said, okay, we'll replace it for you. There's that. And then one day I was putting pop in the fridge and I dropped a can of pop straight down like this, and it left a perfect circle break. Yeah, Ted says, mo gizmos, mo problems. And you are right, my friend. I didn't take my own advice on that. But yeah, so I dropped a can of pop and it put a perfect circle crack in the plastic housing of the fridge, the actual like inside lining. Not covered under warranty. So it's still there. I'm not sure how I'll ever repair it. I don't know how they would have repaired it if it was under warranty, but just read the fine print, because that is what it is. So then I'm going to say, you know, here's where I say, you know, do as I say and not as I do. But if you're looking at appliances with repairedness in mind, there's a few things to keep in mind. And this is something that my wife and I did for a lot of years, and we may go back to it eventually as well. But first off, simple is better. So believe it or not, the lowest end, cheapest appliances, for the most part, are actually some of the easiest ones to get parts for and some of the easiest ones to work on, because, you know, a low end washing machine that still has a turn knob or a, you know, push button dryer, that kind of stuff, is still basically the same as it was 30, 40 years ago, just with less expensive parts. And there's a lot of them don't even have circuit boards in them. So that, yeah, simpler is better. And then I'm going to tell you this as well. Stay away from digital models if you ever want to work on them yourself. However, I am doing quite a bit of research for this episode. The circuit boards are more modular than they used to be, like the control board that's in them. And the price, you know, there's good... the pricing for some of this stuff aftermarket is getting lower. So that is helpful as well. And then, of course, if you're looking at something with repairedness in mind and think, okay, down the road, I might need, yes, I'm going to talk about Brian's camper washing machine here in a little bit. It's even in my notes, but he says our camper washing machine is super easy, and it is. It's really cool. If you're looking at an appliance to repair down the road, one of your best bets is to go with the Whirlpool brand or any one of the companies under the Whirlpool banner, because, again, a shit ton of those parts are interchangeable and you can buy them aftermarket dirt cheap. And I'm going to give you some resources where you can get that kind of stuff. So if you're like, you know what, I want to get an appliance that I can keep running, you know, whether you want to respect the environment or you just want to be self-sufficient and be able to repair it. So, you know, the Whirlpool family has a lot of those a lot of interchangeable parts. So that's good. And then everybody's going to hate me for saying this, but stay away from the front load washers if you can help it. They just tend to be, well, they're heavier, but they tend to have a lot more compact parts in them and they're a lot less easy to work on. So just remember that. Anyway, now repairedness, where do we go? Troubleshooting appliances. This is the first thing. So how do we troubleshoot? And for the record, you guys, I harp on troubleshooting all the time, and Saturday morning's episode of the podcast is actually going to be about mastering troubleshooting, or at least improving your troubleshooting skills. So that's coming up. But when you're talking about appliances, it's pretty easy. Use your senses. And we always do that anyway, unless we're senseless, and that's another story. But, you know, use your ears. So first off, you're going to listen to it. And if something's making a noise that it shouldn't make, there's a reason for it. It's not just going to stop. You know, if all of a sudden your dryer or your washing machine is making a really loud clunking noise, it could be as simple as the load is unlevel, or it could be something a lot worse, like your direct drive coupling's gone, or one of the springs is busted that kind of help center the spinning drum. So just, you know, if you hear something, pay attention to it. Trust me. Then we're going to use our eyes. We're going to go in and we're going to periodically inspect all of our appliances. This is just something we do. Because again, Brian says, well, it might just stop. Yeah. The problem is with a, yes, with if a noise just stops, then you could be even in worse trouble. Like I said, if the noise is just simply because something is out of whack, as far as like say you put like a really heavy beach towel on one side and it has it out, out of line and it's thumping as it goes around. Well, that could be, but you know, when the noise really stops, then you might be in trouble. Periodic inspections. I always say, you know, prevention is preparedness. Preparedness is prevention. So take a minute. Once a month, once every 3 months, whatever it is, and just kind of visually inspect your appliances. Look for wear and tear marks. Look for things that are out of line. Just look for things that don't look right. And if there is something, fix it before it gets worse. You know, I always say, always fix a loose screw. And if you have like, say a dryer door that isn't shutting quite right, well, adjust that before you get it, you know, before you can, before something worse happens. Or if you have a washing machine, Ted says, just spritz it up with WD-40. Absolutely. Or, you know, like I used to do in high school, when the engine light would come on, I just put a piece of tape over it, right? If you can't see it, don't worry about it. And then here's the best one, use your nose. And if you smell something that you shouldn't smell coming from an appliance, turn the damn thing off right away because it's not going to get better. The other night, we actually had, Becky and I were laying in bed, and we could smell something like, it was a bit of a burning smell coming up from the basement. And of course, I went, it was something to do with the furnace. And this was right after, it was literally the night that I did the episode on keeping your heat going. So I came downstairs, and I took the two front panels off the furnace and tried to figure out where it was coming from. And the best I could tell was it had a brand new filter in there. Well, it was new when they cleaned the furnace, but I think there must've still been quite a bit of dust in there. It seemed to have built up, and it was causing a bit of a, like a dusty burning smell. I took the filter out, let it run without the filter for the evening, you know, kept our noses going and we couldn't smell it. But like I said, if it smells like burning, unplug the damn thing and look at it right away, figure out what's going on. Because like I said, if it sounds like it, it's on its way out. If it looks like it, it's just getting there. But if it smells like it, you're SOL at that point. And now, find yourself a good owner's manual for all of your appliances. Yeah, they come with a paper manual, but a lot of times you can find a more comprehensive one online. Look for something with exploded parts diagrams. Look for something that breaks down every part and gives you the manufacturer's part number for all of it. You want to know that. Now, if you ever need a part, let's see what Brian says here. My buddy's dad was a mechanic, and we would ask him how to fix noises in our junker cars. He said, turn up the radio. Exactly. You know, if the dryers make, or if the washing machine's making a lot of noise, close the door to the laundry room so you don't have to worry about it. That kind of stuff, right? If you ignore it, it'll go away. No, that's bad advice, Tim. Bad advice. Back up from that. I'm just kidding. Anyway. If you have that exploded diagrams, those are important. It's good to have, you know, doesn't hurt to at least print off all your parts diagrams for your appliances. So you have backup just in case you can't access the internet or whatever it happens to be. Now plug that when you need that part, instead of just going to like one website, plug it into Google. That's what I've always done. Two best places I found for cheap parts are actually Amazon and eBay. A lot of times you'll type in that part and it'll come up, and then you'll find like a cross-reference or something like that. But eBay and Amazon are awesome. Some of the other ones, repairclinic.com, easyappliances.com, partsselect.com, partsdoctor, as in partsdr.com. And then for me up here in Canada, reliableparts.ca is great. Yes, and Brian says, Google the product numbers or serial numbers to find manuals. Yes, that's good advice. I forgot. And a lot of times, if you add in .pdf to your search, it'll help eliminate some of those really shady websites that makes you want to pay for, you know, downloading and that kind of stuff. But a lot of times if you add .pdf, it'll bring those manuals right to the top when you're searching. Now, when we need to troubleshoot, when we need to start fixing these appliances, and like I said, a lot of the appliances aren't nearly as daunting as one might think to repair. And I'm always going to start with this because I'm as guilty as the next one, but check the obvious first, right? First, we're going to see if your washing machine all of a sudden died, maybe something fell in the cord and unplugged it. So you're going to check the plug, right? I know, Tim. Why do we check the plug? Well, because we always check the obvious one first, right? So Chicken Hawk just showed up. Hey man, how are you? And he says, your title made me think of this. My wife asked me why I carry a gun around the house. Why I carry a gun around the house. I said Decepticons. She laughed. I laughed. The toaster laughed. I shot the toaster. It was a good time. Yes, when appliances attack. I was actually, if you guys remember the movie Pulse that came out, I don't know, in the early 2000s, it was a remake of the 80s movies where appliances and stuff came alive. And I don't know, it was a little homage to that. But yes, so just be careful, because if your toaster's wearing body armor, you could be in trouble. So we're going to check to make sure it's plugged in. Then we're going to check the breaker. I know, Tim, I know. And even if it appears like it's on, we're going to flip it off. We're going to count to five, and then we're going to flip it back on. Because I recently realized that some breakers take a while to reset, and I had a little lag on my face because I didn't know that. And then you're going to learn how to use a multimeter, because you want to check to make sure that, you know, there's power getting to the actual appliance. So yes, maximum overdrive, Ted. I made a list last night. Probably, you know, I did that show just recently on the, what was it? The top five most rewatchable post-apocalyptic TV shows. Well, I got another one coming up in maybe 2-3 weeks. It's going to be my favorite 80s post-apocalyptic movie. So, and spoiler alert, Maximum Overdrive's on there. It is a guilty pleasure. I love that movie. Plus, I'm a Stephen King fan, right? So, washing machine. That's where we're going to start, because those tend to be, you know, they spin. What do they say? They're road hard and put away wet. And that's exactly what we do with a washing machine. Preventative maintenance. You know, you're going to inspect the hoses. You're going to inspect all the connections, because a lot of times, again, washing machines are some of the ones that do the worst vibrating and gyrating. You know, they do more jumping around than some exotic dancers, I'm sure. And so we want to make sure that the hoses aren't getting frayed or chafed or bent or kinked or dripping in general. Now, here's another one that we don't always think of, and it saves us money, but it's also really good for the washing machine. Don't use more detergent than you need to. I'm bad for that. I end up using more than I should. And then you end up getting a lot of scum and buildup up in, you know, whether it's the dispenser area or the washing machine or anything like that. Now, here's something. Whoops. Chicken Hawk says, had a rat chew through a cord going to a deep freeze in the garage. Wow, that's insane. And yeah, that's just exactly what it could be. I mean, so we had a neighbor when we lived out east down Digby Neck, before we'd moved down there. Their house ended up burning down. And I'm going to talk about this a little bit later, but I didn't have the story in here. They had an extension cord running from their deep freeze. And it had gotten, they'd run it under the deep freeze, but somehow the foot of the deep freeze, when they defrosted it, got set on top of the extension cord. And over time, the weight of the deep freeze worked its way through and ended up shorting it out, causing a fire, and burnt their house down. So, man, yeah. And Ted says, I bet it's a dead rat now. I'm thinking that you probably had, if you keep it up, you'll have to have a joint funeral for the toaster and the dead rat, you know, but don't overload. You guys are going to end up hearing a pattern today, because that's pretty much the story for everything but a deep freeze or a fridge. Don't overload it, because, you know, especially older washing machines and the direct drive ones, because they're almost all direct drive now. And if you're not sure what a direct drive means, it's exactly what it is. But your motor sits on the bottom and the drum sits right on top. And the only thing that connects it is what they call a direct drive coupling. It's basically a, you know, a bolted on coupling that hooks to the bottom of there and to the top of the motor. And as it spins, that's what drives it. And if you put too much weight on there, eventually that thing's going to chew out, spit up, and it is fixable and replaceable, but it is a royal pain in the ass. Sometimes it's better to hire somebody to do it. But you can do it. And they're cheap. It's just a lot of work to do. Make sure your washing machine's on level ground. Make sure the feet are adjusted so that it's level. Because if it's not, it's going to shake, rattle, and roll. And it may not affect it right away. But over time, you're going to end up wrecking your washing machine simply because the feet aren't level. Know how to clean it? I mean, that should go without saying. But, you know, some CLR or running an empty load with hot water and some bleach will help get rid of some of the mildew, especially those front load washing machines are deadly for that. Switch out your finished load immediately. And I know we're all guilty of this, and I don't mean every time, but I mean almost every time, because if they sit there, that you got the dampness and the heat and it creates mildew, and then the mildew gets in places and then it wants to rot the rubber seals. But then you also want to check what else we got, the filters on your water hoses. So I came across a new product recently, which I thought was really cool, because the internal pump to your washing machine doesn't want to have silt and dirt and debris coming in from your water line. So say you're on, you know, not city water, you're on country water, and you have a pump, and say it's bringing up silt and stuff. Well, the last thing your washing machine pump wants is to get that in there. So you put those little washers in there that potheads used to like to steal and put in their pot pipes or whatever. Anyway, but they're a pain in the butt to take out because you got to disconnect the hose and then fish down in there, take out that rubber that's in the end of the hose. Well, they now make these plastic inline filters that are just like a break apart coupling. So they go in line with the hose and they're way easier to take apart. So just check them out on Amazon. They weren't even that expensive, but they were really cool, really inexpensive maintenance item for your washer. Now here's the other thing. If your washing machine has a digital display, know what your digital codes mean. Again, and because a lot of people always just assume, well, a digital code, if it's flashing some kind of code, well, I'm hooped. I got to call in the Maytag repairman and get him to come in and fix it. But about half of the codes are something simple like a blocked filter or an unbalanced load, or it's not getting water, or it overheated and it needs to reset. So, you know, sometimes it can be as simple as unplugging the washing machine, wait for 10 seconds and plugging it back in. You know, did you reboot your computer? Well, you might reboot your washing machine, right? But it's true. Ted says we got such good water in Florida, we don't even use filters. See, he always has to rub it in. But what about all the sand? Doesn't that get in things? So on especially the older style washing machines, thanks Chicken Hawk, on the older style washing machines, almost all the parts are accessible. But the thing, like I said, with a washer, they beat, they pound, they rattle. They're hard on themselves. But, you know, whether it's the motor, the pulley, the old style had a motor off to the side with a pulley and a belt. And those were actually easier to fix, but they had a few extra parts. Then you might have a clogged hose. It might be your clogged drain. So because a lot of times, you know, a lot of the gunk and dirt and stuff gets in that hose. It goes, it works its way down the drain, but eventually if it gets clogged off, can be really nasty. You can have a bad day. Your washing machine just sits there and spins and never is not able to drain it, right? Like I told you, the direct drive coupling, that is something that goes, it's really bad, but it's fixable. If you take your time and you watch YouTube videos, you can do that too. This is one that used to happen to Becky and I a lot when we lived out east. The washing machine lines were in an quote unquote unheated porch. I mean, it was heated, but it wasn't. And so 2-3 times a winter, the water supply lines would freeze up on the washing machines. Then we'd have to put a space heater out there and thaw it out. So sometimes people might think, hey, wait a minute, it's not working, but it's just frozen lines. You just need to thaw them out. Now in Florida, you know, Ted, we're okay with that. But no. Now, here's one thing I will say. If your washing machine tub is leaking, if the water's coming out from inside the washing machine and it's not like a pump or something, it's actually the tub, it's time to replace the washing machine. So that's one way to know. Like, there are times when it's catastrophic damage and you're just not going to fix it. And if the drum's leaking, just call it a day and buy yourself a new washer. But again, it is what it is, right? We're looking at the dryer now. Now, this is going to sound funny. Do not overload it. I think I said that before, but you know, your dryer is made to hold a fair bit, but you always got to think that when it first starts up, it's going to have the heaviest load that it has, right? And Ted says the only thing frozen down here is what's on the freezer or in the freezer. So don't overload your dryer. If you're not sure, you know, if your washing machine is a high capacity and your dryer won't quite handle it, then do your dryer loads in halves. But the thing is, it takes the most stress and strain on the motor when it first kicks in, and that's when the load's going to be the heaviest. So, you know, don't overload it because you're going to end up, you could break a belt or a bunch of things, right? Now, dryers, for the most part, are absolutely simple and easy to use. We'll kick that guy out there, whatever he was up to. They're fairly easy to repair, to be honest. So a few things before I forget, you know, living up in the land of where it gets cold enough to freeze your nose off, don't forget to keep an eye on your dryer vent outdoors. Because normally they're under the eaves and a lot of times ice and snow fall down and build up around there. And it's not usually a problem if you're like us and you do like 17 loads of laundry a day because the heat keeps melting the ice and the snow. But if you're the type that only does say like one load a week or something, keep an eye on that, especially because if the snow and ice and everything else starts building up out there, all of a sudden your dryer is not going to work and you can end up wrecking your dryer, or at least, you know, making it work way harder than it needs to because it just can't get the dampness or the air out of the line. So just remember that. Now, the big one is, you know, clean the dryers, like clean your lint trap, clean the lint screen, clean down in where the lint goes, you know, where your lint screen goes into, clean your pipe. And I'm going to tell everybody this, remember this, if this is one thing you remember from the episode, if you have vinyl, white vinyl or plastic tubing or hose running out of the back of your dryer, replace it tomorrow. Get rid of it and put the foil stuff in there or rigid stuff, because it is a fire hazard. It has been for years. The older dryers didn't get as hot and it was safer to use, but don't use it anymore, just so you know. And once in a while, pull your lint screen out and give it a hot soapy wash. That's simple. Now, as far as what can break on a dryer, again, so much of this is just simple little parts, simple little pieces that if you're never told about it, you don't know. But the most common thing on a dryer is the drum belt. And it's just a long, I don't know how long it would be, 6 foot, little tiny skinny belt. It doesn't even take much. Oh, Ted says he has a Bosch ventless dryer. I've seen a couple YouTube videos on that, but it's been a long time. I'll have to check that out. So basically, there's a really thin belt that runs all the way around the drum of the dryer, then down around a pulley and around a spring-loaded switch. So if the belt breaks, that switch kicks over and your dryer won't turn on. So you might think, oh, well, I don't have any power, but the light inside the dryer turns on. But when you hit the switch, nothing happens. And that's almost always, well, quite, you know, the most common thing is a belt. So get yourself one or two of those belts because they're worth having. Drum support rollers. Those are the little things that most of them are rubber or nylon, and they just kind of help keep the drum in place. And they act like, I don't know, like wheels on a roller coaster that keep it in line, but they tend to wear out over time. And that's when your dryer drum will get kind of thumping and, you know, anyway, those are easy to replace. There's a thermal fuse in your dryer. If your dryer ever gets overheated, that can pop. And that's simple to replace too. You just take the back off, find the little fuse, haul it out, put a new one in. Dryers have an element in them, you know, similar in principle to what would be in the bottom of an electric stove. If that burns out, your dryer is going to run, but you're not going to have any heat. Could be a thermostat as well. But again, these are all just simple parts. But the thing about appliances is everybody looks at them like they're some kind of magical. Again, I got to call the Maytag repairman to repair them, but they're not that bad. You can do it too. I promise. It's not nearly as hard as you think. Now, the door itself is going to have a switch on it. So if you guys notice, you know, it's kind of like a fridge door. When it gets in close enough, it turns the light off. If that switch isn't depressing all the way, or if it's broken, the dryer is not going to engage. So check it. If it doesn't make that clicky noise, or if your door is kind of warped or something, it may not be engaging enough, and you may not end up getting it to close so the dryer will run. You know, simple. And like I said, replace one of if you get one thing, replace the plastic. If you still have plastic, nobody should, but if you do, replace it with foil or metal. Now, stoves to me are like the hot water heater of appliances. There's literally on a simple non-digital stove or, you know, minimal digital stove, there is almost nothing you can't repair in them. And they're all so simple. As far as, you know, preventative maintenance goes with a stove, just clean it. You know, clean it every so often. If it's self-cleaning, run the self-cleaning. If you want to pick up some oven cleaner, use the off stuff. The yellow is the one that I've had. You'll see yellow and blue. The blue is fume-free. It's supposed to be good, but I've had really good luck with the yellow. It scrapes up good. The yellow is a lye-based product, so wear gloves. Wear goggles if you want, but wear gloves for sure. When you're running the self-cleaning option, in any case, keep a fire extinguisher or a can of fire spray around. Those are super important, trust me. You can get the old lady foil rings. I actually like those. We have a flat top stove now, so it's not a big deal. But if you go with a repairedness style stove, something that's easy to repair, then you're going to have the old wire style burners on them. So get some of those foil cups that go underneath. Get a foil liner that goes under your element in your stove. And then, you know, once every couple of months, throw those out and replace them. And then you don't have to clean. Way better. Now, as far as if you guys have never really looked at a stove, there's, you know, it's got a lot going on, but it's all really simple. So you're going to have your normal element that goes on all the time. It's called your bake element. It's the lower element. And it's normally kind of shaped like a square. And then it goes into a couple of connectors in the back. So if you can use a screwdriver, you can take an element out. If your lower element, or if when you turn your oven on, it doesn't heat up, it's probably your baking element. So you want to open it up, let everything cool down, and then look at that element. You're probably going to see a crack or a burn spot in that element. It basically looks like a big, thicker version of what you would see up on the, you know, the coil top burners, right? So just take it out, take it down to your local hardware store, or better yet, especially your bake element. You need the bake element. Keep an extra bake element on hand. They're cheap. You know, a lot of places have them for like $30, and you just take it in, size it up. The two things you need is the right size and the right connectors, a bunch of different connectors, but they're pretty generic. So, you know, replace that. Now, broil, that's the upper one. So when you turn it up to really high, that one may not be working. That's not nearly as important. You don't use it as often. It doesn't tend to burn out as often, but easy to replace. Then up on top, you're going to have probably a small size burner and a large size burner. And those are literally, you can lift up on them and pull them out if you've never tried it before. Super simple and an easy way. If you have a burner that's not working and you want to test and see if it's a bad burner, just take a good burner that you know is working, haul it out, pop it in on the other side. That's it. Test it out. Now, if it's not a burner, then there is the burner socket, they call it. And it's just kind of like a metal sleeve with some wires, and it's what sends the power down to it. Those can burn out. Test them with a, you know, continuity tester or a multimeter, whatever. Check it out. From there, could be a switch behind the knob. And something else a lot of people don't realize, even if you have like a glass top or a flat top stove, the burners in them are just as easy to replace. They're a little more money, but they're just as easy to replace. You just need to figure out how your flat top stove pops up. And then they're just kind of like almost like a ceramic burner under there. And you just lift them up, pop them out, and Bob's your uncle. Super easy. Now here's a couple of funny ones. And this may not, most of the stoves nowadays don't have this. But two things that I've dealt with as a property manager over the years with old appliances, and once for us as well. Older style stoves had actual glass fuses in them. And a lot of times you could flip up the top and replace them, and they would control the different sections of the stove. So check that out. If it's an old stove, that might be. But the thing I've been called out for the most, I think maybe three times at three different properties, the tenant said, my stove's not working. So I'd go over and I'd check. And I don't even remember how I learned this, but most of the old stoves had a timer dial in the middle, and it was set to like delay start the stove. So somehow somebody would bump that and they would turn it to 2 or 3 hours from now. And then they'd go to turn their oven on and the light would come on, but it wouldn't heat up. And they'd think, well, there's something broken. All it was they accidentally bumped the timer. And so the stove was doing what it was supposed to, but it was waiting the 2 or 3 hours to kick on. So just keep an eye on that stupid timer and make sure it's at 12 all the time. So there's basically no time in it. But, you know, again, just one of those things. Now, fridges, they're a whole nother beast. There's not a lot that can be repaired on them, but again, preventative maintenance is a big thing. So, you know, first off, and this is, not everybody realizes this, I've run into this trouble a lot, but know where the cold air comes into your fridge, right? So any fridge is kept cold by the cold air coming out from the freezer. And there's typically an interior vent in the fridge, and it's normally at the top most times. And Brian, yeah, you're a man after my own heart. He says, I used to play with a clock on my grandma's stove when I was a kid. And a lot of times the old timers didn't even know what that did, and it could really mess with their head, right? So yeah. Oh, and I missed that one. Ted says, oh my God, I remember those timers from like 40 years ago. They're literally miserable. I don't even know. I don't know. I mean, I know why they were there, but they caused more grief than anything. And like I said, three different times I've been called out because a lot of these rentals that I look after, if they have old appliances in them, they don't replace them until they need to be, right? So just, yeah, if you ever go into a place or if you have a really old stove and it won't turn on, check that stupid timer dial because yeah, it can cause a lot of grief for people, and they're simple, right? So fridge, say you got a fridge and it's not cooling the way you want it to, or it's not running at all. Well, we'll check the power. Always start there. Simple, right? Check that the temperature dial didn't get bumped. Even though you know you never adjusted the temperature, maybe you were loading up a large, I don't know, like a large thing of lettuce or something. You pushed it to the back and all of a sudden it twisted the knob. And now you've got way less cold air coming in because it got turned down and you didn't realize it. Then check those cold air vents. Make sure that you don't overstack the upper back part of the shelf. In most fridges, that's where it is, because the shit gets pushed back and then it blocks off. And then what happens is that cold air can't come down in. Your freezer's working fine, but you're not getting any cold air down into your fridge. And a lot of times that's what make, you know, that's as simple as it is. And then what'll happen is somebody will say, well, the fridge isn't working. So they turn it up or turn it down, I guess you'd say, to make it colder, right? So then it ends up freezing anything that's on the top there. And then what happens is, say it was grocery day, and then you gradually eat down your supply in your fridge, you clean out that area up there, and then all of a sudden everything in your fridge gets ruined because it got froze, you know? So yeah, anyway, just something to think about. Dirty coils, a blocked vent, so down underneath, sometimes you can access them from the front, sometimes you access them from the back, but just open them up, and there's going to be vent coils down there that are going to be full of dust and dirt and debris and probably enough dust bunnies and cat hair to make another cat. Just something to think about. So get down there, clean it out, so your fridge is exhausting the heat and cooling properly, because that's really about the only place that you can, that you can access any of those. Like what I'm trying to say is the old stoves used to have those coils all the way on the back. Now some of them are interior and you can access a little bit of them from the bottom. Something to think about. What else? We got cold air vents. Temperature dial didn't get bumped. We talked about that. Now, in the back, there are, most fridges do have a circuit board in them, but they're mostly replaceable now and they're fairly inexpensive. So what you want to do is you want to haul that circuit. You want to take the access panel off the back of the fridge. So if your fridge is acting weird, like it's not going hot or cold, or it's not going colder than you want it to, pop that back off and you're going to inspect that circuit board. And of course, if you see something burnt, well, we're going to replace it. Order one ahead of time because they are notorious for going bad. Now, the other thing is you're going to see little caps in there, like soldered on little cylinders. And if one of them has like a popped cap on the top, so like the crimped end is popped open, that means that I think it's called a capacitor, is blown or burnt and it's bad. So you need to replace the board. It's not that, not too bad. Now we go back to using our ears, right? If your fridge is making a funny noise, first off, we got to figure out where it's coming from. So, there's basically two fans and motors in your fridge. One's in the freezer and one's down underneath. One runs the compressor. So the easiest way to figure it out is if you open the freezer door and the noise gets louder, you know that the issue is with the fan or the motor in the freezer. If you open the freezer and it doesn't get any louder, you know that it is the compressor fan and motor down underneath. They're both not that difficult to replace or work on. With the freezer, it's a more compact one. It usually has a plastic fan on it or plastic fan blades. So again, find the parts, order them, have them ahead of time if you think it's going to be a problem. And then down underneath, you're going to open up the back of the fridge. It's going to have an access area once again. And sometimes the motor itself will seize up, or it'll get like a flat spot on it. So, turn the power off first, put your hand on the compressor motor fan blade that's in there and just move it around once by hand or a few times just to get it wind up and going and moving and freeing up again. This can happen, especially if a fridge has set in, say, a garage and not used for a long time, that can happen. So then after that, you're going to go plug it back in. And if the compressor motor doesn't kick in still, then you need a new motor or, check the belt. If there's a belt there, check the fan blades, all that. And Ted says a bulging capacitor is never good. And you are right, my friend. So that's really it. Fridges, one of the things that go on them sometimes is those door seals, so your fridge won't cool properly because the door's not shutting properly. Just go around. You can order that stuff. A lot of times it's in bulk in a certain, or it comes pre-cut depending on where you order it from. That's important. It's magnetic. And when it wears out, you can order a new one if it's worth it to you. And also a lot of people might not know this, but dryers and fridges for sure tend to be ambidextrous, or you can reverse them. So almost all, depending on the design of them, but almost all fridges and dryers, you can actually flip the doors around. So, if it's not convenient for you the way it is, just flip it and make it go the other way. Anyway, Dishwasher. So this one, dishwashers are a pain, and I don't know why. I guess it's because they're made out of like aluminum foil and saran wrap, because there's not much to them. I mean, you pick up a new dishwasher and I don't think they weigh much more than 30 pounds. But first off, scrape all the damn food off your plates before you put it in there. I know they say you don't have to, but you're just doing yourself a favor, because you're saving yourself from getting those filters clogged up down underneath. You're saving yourself from, you know, just needing to clean it out more often than you should. But just scrape your plates off. I know, whatever, right? Then down at the bottom, there's going to be a filter. And a lot of times you can remove it, and that's where like hair or just gross stuff collects. And if that gets too clogged up, then it can't drain, and it's just going to sit there, and the dirty, skanky water is going to sit in there. And it's going to be like one of these rentals that I look after. And we went in after the person had moved out, and they're like, oh, by the way, the dishwasher hasn't worked in a while. And when I say a while, it had been probably 6 months with like fatty, congealed, rancid water in there. It was so bad. I wanted to tear it out, but the owner of the property is like, just give me a minute. He said, and he came in, he had a little shop vac thing and sucked everything out of there. And you know what? We ended up getting it working, but it was nasty. Now the down in the bottom, you got the spray arm. It's like yay long, and it spins around, has all those little holes in it and shoots the water up. That, especially if you've got like calcium in your water or rust or whatever, those can get clogged up really bad. So what you want to do is leave the dishwasher empty, take out all the trays and everything, dump in a half a cup to a cup of CLR. I love that shit. It's like Frank's Red Hot Sauce. I put that shit on everything. Well, I put that CLR in everything, and it really works. Run it through, and it's going to clean out all that deposit. There we go. Ted says, biggest problem besides operator error on AC units here in Florida is blown capacitors. And I don't know, Ted, do you just replace the one capacitor, or do you typically replace the whole board that's in there? Just curious, because, you know, I've never been one for soldering or that kind of stuff. But so if I guess if you a couple things, if your dishwasher is leaking, it could be that your door needs to be adjusted. There's usually a latch at the top that you can put a few you can back some screws off or tighten the screws up so that the latch fits properly. The seal around the door, it's just like a silicone kind of fin that can wear out. If that's worn out, you're going to end up having water on it. If your dishwasher is not running, I know this is going to blow your mind, check the power first, and then there's going to be a fan in the back as well. You can do the same thing, spin the fan motor blades, see if you can get it out of the dead spot on the motor, start it back up, might get you going a little bit. Now, the other thing about your door not being adjusted is if it's not, if it's latching, but it's not latching all the way, again, there's a switch in the door. Most appliances have door switches as a safety mechanism. So if the dishwasher door is shutting, but not latching all the way, that switch might not be engaging. And then your dishwasher, you know, so a lot of times we're like, oh my God, my dishwasher's broken. But all it is a misaligned door or malaligned door that isn't shutting all the way. The switch isn't depressing, and that's it. You know, so again, take a minute, look at the simple stuff and work your way through it. But again, dishwashers, they of all appliances, they have the shortest lifespan. So do expect it. And if they are, again, dishwashers the same as washing machines. If the drum's leaking, throw it out, because you can't repair that. That's basically the structure of the appliance. Now, freezers. And these are probably, you know, they're some of the most reliable. You know, they're the old workhorse in the family, but they're really the least repairable. So there's not a shit ton you can do with them, but you can do some maintenance with them. And the first thing I'm going to do, large capacitors, just unhook and replace. Nice. So with freezers, the first thing you're never going to do is put something heavy on the doors, because years ago, when Becky and I were moving into, I think it was our very first house, she had a deep freeze she was bringing with her, just an apartment style one. And we put it in the back of the U-Haul, and then we put something really heavy on top of it, and the door caved in. And of course, I'm like, oh, I can fix that. So I twisted it and turned it and popped it and tried to get it back into place. And you know what? We had that freezer for like 5 years afterwards, and it never shut properly. And it frosted over and it didn't cool properly, simply because we took a brand new freezer and we put something heavy on top of it. So don't do that if you don't have to. The door gasket can go on freezers as well. I mean, it doesn't tend to happen a whole lot anymore. It seemed to happen in the older ones, but again, that's easy to replace. It's just a plastic coated magnetic strip that goes all the way around. Just, you know, pop the name of your, find your owner's manual, get the parts number, pop it into Google, order yourself some. Especially if it's really starting to get frayed or worn out, just get some. Now, go with a chest style freezer. I mean, for a couple reasons, but they're more energy efficient because when you open the door, the cold air wants to stay in, but they tend to have a longer shelf life or longer runtime than the upright ones. The only freezer we've ever had die on us was an upright freezer, and I'm not sure, it was right after I defrosted it, and I don't know what happened. It just stopped working, and I couldn't figure out the problem, so we replaced it. But we have three chest freezers now, and they've been really good to us. But freezers aren't made or designed to run on extension cords. As I say that, I do have one out there that is right now, but I'm going to install a new plug soon. So if you can help it, don't run them on an extension cord. And if you do, make sure it's a big, thick, beefy extension cord. That's what she said, that is no longer than it needs to be. Okay. Get yourself a freezer alarm system. I harp on these things. Chickenhawk knows about these, but I use the Go-V ones. I've had great luck with them, and almost everybody who's bought them has too. One or two people have had trouble getting the app to work, but these things are awesome. I have had them since last April, and they're running on the same, I think they have three AA batteries in them. They're just Eneloops, and they just work. I can check them from anywhere in the world, and it tells me my freezers are frozen. That's it. That's all I want, and it works great. Now, give your freezer room to breathe. Don't push it right back to the wall. There's going to be John says he loves them too. Yeah, they're great. I just, you know, they're simple. Could they have made a better interface for them? Oh, absolutely. But you know what? They are miles better than the old style I used to have that I could never get to connect. I could never get to stay working, and I could never keep batteries in them. Just some, you know, food for thought. Clean off the dust on the back of your freezer. There's going to be like an intake vent there, an area where the hot air comes out and that kind of stuff. Make sure that gets clean, because the more dust and debris that gets on there, the harder it has to work and the shorter the lifespan of the freezer. And then here's the other one that some people talk about, but not everybody, thermal battery or space. You know, your freezer doesn't have to work nearly as hard if it's full. Now, if you're the type that just has a reasonable size freezer, but don't keep a lot of stuff in it, then take some old ice cream containers or milk jugs, fill them full of water and throw them in there, because you're taking up the space. You're allowing it to hold more cold capacity, and your freezer doesn't have to work as hard. Just a bunch of little things. Gas ranges. So this is the only gas one we're going to talk about tonight. I mean, you can practically get gas appliances for everything, but really the main one that a lot of people deal with are ranges. And there's not a lot to them, but if the burner won't light, you can lift up the top and there's like an igniter in there. And a lot of times they'll get a carbon buildup on them. Just take some emery cloth, brush them off, and test them. If it works, then great. If it doesn't, replace it. And it's not difficult. If you can unclip a wire, that's it. The burners, they're just like side burners on a barbecue. So take them out, give them a good brush with, how do you want to put it? Like with a wire brush, clean them all out, because there's nothing to them. If they haven't rusted through, they're still going to work, because they're literally an empty piece of metal with a bunch of fine holes punched in them. That's it. So yeah, I mean, unless your burner has rusted through, clean it out, put it back. Make sure your stove's getting gas, and you know, that's about it. Oh, and something I actually discovered putting this video together, a lot of gas stoves have an igniter fuse on them and it can pop, and it just looks like a little inline. It's kind of like a fuse, but if it pops, it can be replaced. So just find out if your stove even has one of those. And if it does, yeah, keep one on hand. So from there, I mean, that's pretty much all I have for appliances, but I always love to talk about off-grid options, because, you know, part of the preparedness mindset and lifestyle is, being able to repair what you have, but also, you know, two is one, one is none, three is a guarantee, right? So having multiple ways of doing things in worst case scenario is always better than not. Dryer. And this is simple. You know, every house I knew of growing up had a clothesline, and every house I knew growing up had a drying rack in the house, and most people kept them around the wood stove, right? And Ted says used to have pilot lights, but that's when natural gas was cheap. Ain't that the truth? Yeah, it's definitely gone up. It's still cheaper than, you know, like furnace oil on the East Coast, but yeah, it's not as cheap as it was. So yeah, even if you don't ever use a clothesline, just, you know, invest in putting one up, because you just never know. The great thing about a clothesline is if your dryer dies, you know, it doesn't have to be the end of the world to use it. It just could be something as simple as, hey, it's a long weekend. Our dryer just died. We don't want to have to drive an hour and a half to the appliance store to go get one. So we're going to use the clothesline for a while, or the drying rack by the wood stove. Those are two simple, simple options. The drying rack takes up no space, and both options save you money. And who doesn't love the smell of bed sheets that have come in off the clothesline? You know, I love it, right? Washing machine. Now, like Brian said earlier, but if you guys haven't seen it before, take a minute and go to the Lots Project YouTube channel. I forgot about that. Brian would know about these too. Small retractable clotheslines on Amazon. You guys can check those out too, because you can put those in a really compact place. But Corey, Brian's wife, did an awesome video. I sat down and watched, I think it was like 15 minutes long or something. She just walks you through her process for doing laundry in the RV. Well, kind of in the RV, but it starts in the RV and then it ends up on the back of the truck. But she uses it looks like a glorified plunger kind of. And I think they do it in a Rubbermaid or in the bottom of a clothes basket. And they just, you know, go up and down with it. It does a great job. And, you know, as long as you don't mind putting a little sweat equity into it, it works. You can use an old fashioned wringer washer as well. That's what she has for wringing her clothes out with. She actually, if I remember the video right, it was actually mounted to the tailgate when it was dropped down on the back of the truck. And again, it worked good. And I'll tell you, back when I was working in the oil patch, there was quite often I'd be caught out of town when we'd hour out. We'd be 2-3 hours away from home and they'd put us up in a hotel. And that was back before I would always keep a bug out bag or a go bag in the truck with me, because I just didn't think. And so you're stuck and you're like, oh, I don't want to have to wear the same socks and gitch tomorrow. Collapsible clothes basket. Yes, that's it. So in the hotels, and this is just all about thinking outside the box, of course, but you know, I'd take my underwear and my socks and I would wash them with Bard soap in the hotel sink. And then I'd wring them out as best I could. And then I'd either use the blow dryer or I'd just hang them up and let them dry overnight. But you know, there's always solutions for it. Brian and Corey, they make their own laundry soap as well. So know how to do that, you know? And then something else I came across the other day was the Wonder Wash hand-powered washing machine. It's really cool. It's basically a hand crank washing machine. And they're about $100, but they're a really cool off-grid option for washing your clothes. Fridge and freezer, right? All kinds of options, but I always love thinking outside the box with this kind of stuff. But first off, the one thing about all these appliances, other than the gas stove, is they require power. So keep a good stock of fuel on hand and a generator. So if the power goes out, you're not shit out of luck, right? And a regular, you know, even if you just have a cheap Harbor Freight 1500 watt generator, it will run your fridge or your freezer or your washing machine or your dishwasher. Won't run your dryer, but it'll even run one large stovetop burner on your stove. So a 1500 watt generator can do a lot of what you need. But if you don't, if we're, you know, worst case scenario, then we go from there, right? Cold cellar. If you guys, you know, the old style cold cellars, or you can dig a hole in the ground and use the coldness from the ground, insulate it and put it down a couple of feet. That's a good way to do it. If it's winter, you know, my dad always used to say, oh, Tim, we got to buy pop for Christmas. He's like, we'll just put it out on the deck in the snow. And it's a great idea. You know, just simple little things like that. Yeti style cooler and an ice machine. That's the Stephen Harris special. But if you, you know, an ice machine with a 7-day cooler, you fill it full, put your stuff in there. Propane fridge or freezer. And a couple other things. Don't forget about, you know, with me, I got an RV parked right out here in the parking lot or in my driveway. And that is, it's just something I never think about, but it's a self-contained living unit that will run off the grid. So if there's, you know, if you're having a bad situation or you say you need a fridge for a while, go out there and turn it on. That thing will run off of 12 volt, 120 volt, and propane. It's great. It's there. Those 12 volt coolers that you can get that run, you know, that you can take in your vehicle for like a picnic or whatever, those are great too. And then I was actually listening to an audiobook today, and it was The World Made by Hand, or I forget what. Anyway, it's a really good post-apocalyptic book. And one thing they did was they would keep their food that needed to be cool. They'd put it in a bag and then they'd hang it in the river. You know, there's always those beer commercials about the guys putting their six packs out in the cold river. But again, if you have, say, an underground spring where you live and the water comes up from underground and it's really cold, that's an easy way to keep stuff cold, just using, you know, the ground. Now, a stove. And this one's literally the simplest. I mean, you can dig a hole in your backyard, put some stones around it, and you get yourself a fire pit. So worst case scenario, you can burn something and cook with it. Coleman stoves are great. Electric hot plates, you can run one of those if you can still find one, just one of those little 1500 watt individual burners. Solar ovens, Preppernet, the guy there that runs that, I can't think of his name right now, but he sells a lot of those solar ovens and some people swear by them. Now, if you live further south, you're going to have better luck with them, but it's something to look at. Wood burning stove. Who doesn't love a good pot of chili or stew that's cooked all day sitting on a wood stove? I mean, if you have it, go for it. And then, of course, the easiest one is just your damn barbecue. For me, it's just a matter of stepping out on the back deck, flipping it up, turning the natural gas on, and I am good to grill steaks. So, you know, gas, charcoal as well. I never even think about charcoal, but yes. Or you could buy a combination one. I've seen some that have charcoal on one side and gas on the other. So if you end up being out of gas, you can always use charcoal, right? And now, dishwasher. First off, dishwasher is a modern convenience that not most people have ever had. But honestly, the best off-grid option for that is to just get ready to have dish pan hands. You know, growing up, a meal was never done until the dishes went up in the sink. And, you know, usually it was the women washed and the men dried, but it was just something we always did. So, you know, anybody can live without a dishwasher. It's pretty simple to wash your dishes by hand, even when power's out, you're off grid or whatever it happens to be. But, you know, that's what I love. There's so much fun in this. I love being able to bring together my, you know, passion for being a handyman, my passion for fixing things, and my passion for prepping, because they do meet and it's something that we don't always think about. And I think it's always a fun exercise to go through some of these off-grid options at the end, because there's tons, and I learned from you guys, and it's just great. So I hope, I try, you know, to intersperse stories and cool facts and tidbits and stuff that I learn along the way. I try to keep these from getting too dry for you, but I also try to pack a lot into it. Joseph Mills messaged me the other day and he says, I don't know how you get so much information in a 1 hour episode. And, you know, it's because, well, tonight was like 11 pages of notes. So I try to put it together for you guys. So there's a whole bunch there. My parents replaced the dishwasher that didn't work for years the day I left for college. Yeah. Oh, I see. I thought, anyway, let me tell you guys, I'll tell you a joke, and it's not my joke. It was my dad's joke, but my dad and my mom, they got married very young and they went to church after their honeymoon. And the pastor's wife asked, did you get anything good for a wedding present? And he said, nothing really, just a 17-year-old dishwasher. And my mother never let him live that down. She slapped him. And, you know, so John says drinking from a fire hose. Absolutely. Yes. There's a lot in there. For the record, all of this is going to get turned into a book eventually. I'm really excited about that. Of course, there'll be illustrations and all kinds of fun stuff, but, you know, that's probably a year down the road, but this whole series is writing the outline for my book as I go along too. So I appreciate you guys hanging in here with me. I try to keep it interesting. I don't want to split the topics up, you know, too much, because then it just seems to lose something from week to week. But anyway, yeah. So that's what I have for you for appliances. Next week, we're going to talk about the exterior of the home, things like roofing, siding, windows, doors, not landscaping. We'll do all of that on another episode, but just the exterior of the home, how you can protect your biggest investment, your bug-in location, and all that. And if you guys, you know, most of you guys are, you know, my guys, you're in here. I love it. I appreciate you coming by and hanging out. But this Sunday, I got an extra special guest on the live stream. 7 p.m., I got Nicole Sauce from Living Free in Tennessee. She's coming on. She's going to talk about her experiences as a landlord in making money, buying investment properties and renting them out. And it's really cool. I think I mentioned it once already, but she's going to be on my show on the two-year anniversary of when I first appeared on her show. And that was my very first public appearance on a podcast. And that was the day that I launched my YouTube channel. It's when I very first started making content. So it's a huge honor to have her come back 2 years later to the day. And I think it's really important to mark milestones and to celebrate dates like that. So anyway, I hope you guys enjoy it. I hope there's a big crowd and come in and join and welcome Nicole to the workshop, guys. So that's it for me. One more quick thing. If you want to keep hearing top quality preparedness, take care, Ted, preparedness content right here on Prepper Broadcast Network. You guys see this live in the video, but it's also live on the audio over on PBN. And I've been so thankful to them because they've opened my content up to a huge new audience, and it's like quintupled the downloads and listens. So thanks to James for that. But tomorrow on PBN, as always, is The Strange Truth with podcaster and author Carl A.D. Brown. He always has a fun and lively discussion centered around Christianity, preparedness, and the new stories no one dares touch. So guys, thank you, because I know you can hang out anywhere and you choose to come in here and hang out with me for an hour. So as always, stay happy, stay healthy, and have a great week.